Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Tired of your old tractor crying when it sees a hill? Or coughing more than Uncle Earl in pollen season? Trade up now at Sid's Trading Company. Coyote and TYM tractors so mean, they'd plow a cornfield in reverse. Uphill. Get her did at Sid's. SidsTrading.com.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Good morning, good morning. Thank you, David. Appreciate that always. Wowie zowie. It's, you know what it is? Today is a big day, y'all. You may think you know what today is, but, well, those of us in the peanut gallery are celebrating Lance's birthday. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. And Hawk, too, remember.
Of course, Hawk's there as well today.
Came to work with Dad today.
This is the six-foot-tall dog.
Oh, yeah. He's been having a blast. Listening in, his head's turning left and right. He goes, I know that voice.
Where's that? Heard that name. They called my name in there. Well, today is also World Honeybee Day, so it doesn't hurt to have your honeybee there with you.
That's right. Well, he was up and at him. He knew where he was supposed to go this morning. He reads my mind. You know, it's like,
sure.
I did not even have to ask. He was ready. And then most mornings, it's just, you know, he rolls over and goes back to sleep. But today, I kept telling him it's a big day today. So he'll get some fried catfish later. That'll be
sure that will be happy for both of y'all.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm going to have my fair share first.
We have never discussed this particular form of alcohol before, but today is National Rum Day.
Oh, I'm a fan.
So I am.
Could have been a Caribbean sailor.
I have visions and memories, but I don't really have a whole lot of knowledge about rum.
I have many lasting memories after drinking too much of that stuff.
Well,
not the real either. The real stuff is, you know, when you go down there, my dad had been on a couple of trips down there and over the years with, cruises and such. And he said, man, that stuff's not as cheap as you think. That's the real
stuff. The real stuff.
That's like right out of the factory, and they're known for it. I mean, you know, I love the spiced.
Sure.
I like the spice a little better, you know, a little flavored as far as the darker color. But
it's usually going to have cinnamon in it, isn't it? I would probably like that.
I would be talking out of tune here and singing out of tune if I told you I know that sugars and all kind of stuff go in there, and it gives you a wonderful hangover.
Well, and I can tell you that I can tell you from personal experience that coconut rum makes a really good ice cream.
Oh, man. I mean, there's so many options. I've had the banana rum and the coconut rums. And,
oh, my goodness.
And just some really, you know, they make.
The bartender segment of the Garden Show, we like to tell you that there's always a use for the things in your garden, whether it's bananas or mangoes or pineapples.
That was one of the fun things about bartending is playing with all of the different, you know, garnishments. And
human beings have always enjoyed their plants, and we enjoy ours in many, many different ways. Some beautiful pictures this morning, and they're not mine, coming in at supertalk.tv. Those are lovely. I guess we know who those are from. I am going to pull the text line up here in a minute, but at the moment, you'll have to tell me what you've got going on over there.
Well, I was just, let's see, we have a few Fridays so far. My system reset on me, too, so I'm not seeing anything just yet.
Okay, well, then
so
it's
you
not
are
just
on
me.
Top of
okay.
it.
It's not
I'm
just
sure
me.
Will everybody wakes up here in a minute. And
I wanted to bring you a little piece of information today. We are all aware that, it's hurricane season and that it just seems that droughts are greater than ever and storms are greater than ever, and the extremes of our climate are driving us all a little bit crazy from day to day. But it's not a new thing, y'all. Recent, very recent University of Cambridge research on stalagmites in Mexican caves are recording 13-year droughts, which they believe probably had a lot to do with the end of the Mayan civilization because it was that area. And we don't know where these records are for us, you know, in present time, but these things are recorded in the earth. The earth is like a big journal of everything that's ever happened. That's why we understand about how old sequoia trees are and that sort of thing, you know, how old our cypress trees are, because when we do have to cut them down, we can see how many rings there are and how many, sometimes, you know, decades and more they've been in that particular environment. But I just thought it was so interesting that it's going to be stalagmites that give us some insight in this particular piece of the world. Classic Maya civilization's collapse, of course, is one of those things of myth. I mean, it existed. We know that. We have the artifacts, but the stories of how it all came apart are not as well documented. So pretty interesting stuff. I know that there are people waiting right now because I did put up that really nasty picture of a bean leaf that has been severely damaged, y'all. So I have to say I got more comments about that than I usually do about things that are pretty. There it is now at supertalk.tv. The question was, what causes this damage and what can you do about it? Well, you need to know about leaf miners. Leaf miners are the larvae of several different kind of critters. They can be beetles or moths or even sawflies. You know, like we think a sawfly is the one that causes that damage on hibiscus plants that ends up with the skeletonized leaves. Well, their larvae can actually be leaf miners as well. Suck in a couple of different kinds of flies. And what happens is you don't even notice the eggs get laid, and where the eggs go, where the larvae hatch, rather, directs them into the leaf itself. Now, this is a blotchy pattern. It can look like a road map, and in many cases, it's really not that big a deal. Oftentimes, you don't see leaf miners in your own garden. You'll see them on a transplant from somewhere, and that's because even though those plants were no doubt treated for insects, the insects never appeared. So you'll see them on the first leaf of something. Take that leaf off. That's no big deal. If you get in a bigger situation, of course, you're going to have to start looking for the critters and figuring out who it is you need to get out of there. There's a couple of beetles that you might find in the leaves, for example, in cucumbers or in beans, and you would want to control them. But it's also true that if you have hibiscus being damaged by sawflies, you can pretty well put one and one together and get two. That's probably what the problem's going to have turned out to be. But it doesn't really matter what it is. If you can exclude it or if you can notice it right away, it's another reason for taking that daily walk in your garden. Even if your garden is like mine, a series of containers and a couple of beds hither and thither, you know, you walk through all there and you notice things. Something maybe a little bit different looking than it was the day before. And you look over there and you see this little trail in the edge of the leaf. Well, take that leaf off. It's going to be a new leaf. It can happen on your seedlings like it did on this one. This was my beans that we planted a couple of weeks ago. But it's only on the first leaves because they prefer that very tender growth. So that's something to watch out for. The immature insects, of course, we don't want to leave those leaves in the garden bed because that's where the future of the insect is. And they do tunnel through the leaves. So they're getting, you know, your plant is getting less of the nutrition and water and whatnot that it needs each time that it starts having this particular issue. So this kind of mining, usually we we'll see what happens in the garden if this goes on long enough, of course. The mature larva will pupate in the leaf, but sometimes they also drop into the soil. So this is another reason why you have to kind of keep an eye on things to not let it get to that point. I'm going to say with regard to leaf miners, it's kind of keep your eye on the prize. That is the healthy plant. So I want you to make sure that you're plucking off the leaves that are affected, but also cultivating around those plants just in case you have any pupa that are in the soil itself. And that, my dear, is the remainder of information about leaf miners. I know sometimes we're tempted to look at that geometry and say, well, that's odd. But it is sometimes odd, and each one will be a little different depending on the insect it is. But when you see those trails, it's leaf miners, and that you can count on that being true. Now, I have to say, if you don't see that photo, you're going to see some other really nice photos today at supertalk.tv. I selected crazy wild August flowers that I wanted to bring to you. One of them is hibiscus, but another is the night blooming cereus because they're just going crazy everywhere. Also Hoya. Now, I don't think about Hoya as much because it's usually a hanging basket plant, and sometimes it turns out to live better indoors, depending on where you happen to be. But Hoya is called wax plant, and the reason for that is because the leaves are very thick and very succulent, so it can easily be overwatered and therefore stop functioning as a plant. That can happen if you have it outdoors. So that's why I say in many times even the prettiest ones that you'll see are in a porch or even still just indoors because they're so beautiful. But the flowers are beautiful, magnificent, and fragrant. They're waxy themselves, they're star-like, and they're in balls. So they're beautiful flowers, and they're one that I want to encourage you. You may have only ever seen Hindu rope plant Hoya, which is beautiful, but it's a very knotted up set of leaves. It doesn't look like it could even be real except that it's green and yellow, so you know it's a plant. Well, Hoya that is more commonly known for its wax flowers, waxy leaves and flowers, is actually just a thick leaf plant that has these flower balls on it. So they're pretty. You'll see that it is in a hanging basket in the photos at supertalk.tv today. There are a couple of different bits and pieces that I wanted to talk to you about in that regard. And one of them is, what do you do when you get to the end of the summer? What happens when, say, for example, the hibiscus slows down, or when the Chinese hat plant has dropped all of its flowers? It's also in that family. I'm in favor of doing what you want to do. If you're going to bring them in the house, for example, whether it's a greenhouse or a shelter, it might be the garage, it might be the living room, wherever you're going to put them for the winter, because we generally do like to group our containers in a spot where they can at least be paid attention to a little bit instead of having them spread out all over the garden. You want to be considering a couple of things. One is that you're making sure that pot is big enough for the plant that's growing in it. And another, frankly, is to be sure that there's no bugs in there, because this would be a good time. August is a good time to recognize pest problems and deal with them. So if you're going to have these plants with you, and I hope you will, some of these, you know, hibiscus, even plumerias, hoyas, some beautiful tropical plants, take care of them. Don't figure that they're going to just be a one and done. You don't have to get rid of them. You can have both a greenhouse, a covered porch. You can bring them in the house. Some places, frankly, it's getting warmer and warmer and warmer, and a lot of those plants will be outside for at least 10 or 11 months of the year. So think about it. Give yourself some more tropicals. You're also going to find those, if they are in garden centers, they're going to be really hoping they don't have to carry them through the winter, so you'll find some good bargains on that, too. This is also a great time to get to the garden center to take a look at what is new or suddenly available or recently returned to the market in shrubs. Shrubs and trees, of course, as you well know, are best planted in the fall. Nobody hears me when I say that, but every garden writer, every horticulturist, every landscaper will tell you that this is the better time to actually install those plants. So go shopping. Get yourself something that you haven't had before, and you'll be glad that you did. Pretty lantana I just saw fly past on the screen. Lantana is one of those things that can take a rough go in the summertime. Sometimes it might be too rainy for it, or you know, they get some bugs, but when you've cut it back, it comes right back and blooms just like it's doing in the photos that you see today. They're just beautiful. Really, really lovely. Southern Shield Fern is another that we have here, and I think it's beautiful too. I love that plant. Really, really do. Oh my goodness. I have to tell you that things are dancing around on my screen this morning a little bit. I can't get the fax line, I mean the text line to work for us, fax line. What year is it?
Facsimile.
We used to have those.
Oh, yeah. Somebody gave me a business card the other day, and it had facsimile. And I was like, wow.
Wow. Yeah. That's been a while.
I want to see this.
That's great. Well, there are an awful lot of things. You're just showing some beautiful plants and bees and one thing and another in that graphic today, and I always appreciate that. I got a couple of notes for you about elephant ears. We're looking at them in their grandeur at this point in the summertime. There's several plants called elephant ear. Taro, which you might see growing, for example, closer to a water source, will have the heart-shaped leaves, but they, generally speaking, are not stiff. They stand on their own, of course, but when you look at alocasias, the ones that point upwards most of the time, those leaves are much, much stiffer. It's not to say that they don't all need fertilizer, but you're going to find that the taros and a couple of the other just things that are called elephant ears don't need as much attention at this time in the year as perhaps the alocasias and even the colocasias do. They're beautiful plants, but they can take both part shade and some shade, or dappled sun. You know, they don't have a problem with that. But I will tell you that if you are seeing spots that are brown on, or edges on the leaves that are brown, it's the heat and the sun getting to it. And that can be difficult with brand new leaves, particularly if they're growing rapidly. So give them a little extra attention. You may want to consider watering them if you're not getting rain every day or even every week where you are, and let them go ahead and recover on their own. It won't be a big deal because they always come right back, but they can get a little bit of damage in August just from stress, and sometimes you have to even do a little trimming on the leaves or cut one or two off. I had a call this week from somebody about their night-blooming cereus plant that hadn't bloomed in a long time, and she said, I water it all the time. I'm always making sure that it's hydrated. Well, I had to say, you know, they're absolutely not going to be able to tolerate their roots being wet all the time. She said it hadn't grown and it hadn't bloomed in several years, but I think the problem is that it's getting too much water. So sometimes we have to recognize that succulent plants like this, leaves that have thick leaves that hold water, sometimes can be easily overwatered. I shouldn't say sometimes. They can be easily overwatered. And if it's a plant that can't tolerate that, like the night-blooming cereus, they'll just sit there. It's not going to collapse. It's not going to, you know, drop all its leaves and show you that it's sick. It's just going to sit there. So I encouraged her, since she hadn't repotted it in a couple of years either, like five, to repot the plant and let the soil be a little bit drier. You may not get flowers this year, but I bet you'll get new growth, and then you'll get more flowers next year. So that was one piece of information that I thought I would pass along. I have a word. Oh, my goodness. Do we really have words today? Yeah, I have a word today. Arenaceous. Okay, what do you think it means?
Very cool, but up in the air.
Cool. Oh, that does sound like it would be, doesn't it?
Would be like a skateboarder term from the 80s.
It certainly could be. It comes from arena, so you're in the right.
It's arenaceous, dude.
Exactly. But the idea is, even though we think about arenas as where you might go to a concert or a ball game or something, arenas are actually, in their original meaning, was a sandy surface that you played something on, sports or whatever, gladiators, mm-hmm. all that stuff. In our case, it describes anything like garden soil that's a little bit gritty, arenaceous. How about that? This is the Garden Mama Show.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
We are the people, Mississippians. We are the land, growing food, fiber, and timber. We are there when you need us, from the roof over your head to the food on your table. We are small town, but big moments, your next door neighbors. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Family termite is a problem.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been in his octopus's garden.
You know, sometimes you figure things out and it all happens at once. This is great. Paula from Dentville, as she says, not me, because I've seen her work and it's beautiful. She's not torturing dogs today. She's watching us. Hello, Paula. And she's making biscuits, which are just too good, y'all. I'm telling you that, Lance, this is it. We've got to have biscuits and jelly, some serious kind of competition going around here very, very soon.
Yeah, and, well, I'm always hungry.
I'm telling you, it'll work out. This is a great question. I'm not sure who to address it to, but I think it's John. Please give me tips on keeping my multiple arborvitae shrubs alive in summer. Okay, I can do that. I lose at least one per year. I don't live at this second house, so they don't get attention daily or weekly. There's the difficulty, among other things. Okay, what about arborvitae? Well, they're perfectly lovely plants. Okay, but they have very specific common problems. One of them is that they're not drought tolerant. So if there's not any way to water them on a regular basis, and it, depending on how big the trees are, you may have a serious issue there. You may have to figure out some kind of, sometimes people will actually just make a little reservoir around the plant so that it can hold the water that does fall, the rain that does fall. Sometimes people will put a bag if there's a space to do that. Usually with an arborvitae, there's not going to be because there's too much foliage right up around the trunk to attach one of those drip bags. But there's something there you need to think about if it's, in fact, an area that, for example, drains really well and does not get a whole lot of rain. That's the first thing. If you have seen pests, if you've seen bagworms, that's one thing. They're usually just a superficial issue, but they can, over time, if ignored, dehydrate the plant. The other things that can dehydrate the plant, in addition to bagworms and drought, are spider mites. So if you've not seen, if tip burn has been the issue that has begun and then eventually the whole plant has turned brown and died, if tip burn, which it always, a lot of times is, if you see that problem, you need to go and take a piece of white paper and put it underneath a branch that's both green and brown and thump it. When the sand, dust looking stuff falls onto the piece of paper, if it, some of it moves around, that's spider mites. And that's how you test for spider mites on anything, really, but it's particularly effective on evergreen trees and shrubs. So you can find out if that's the problem, then you can treat for the spider mites. The only other one that I really think about, deer will eat arborvitaes. So if that's a problem and they're chewed until the point where they just die, you may be losing one a year because that's all the appetite that your deer have. That's the best I can tell you about them. But arborvitaes are beautiful. I'm just sorry that I can't help you solve it with one quick answer. I just don't think there is a quick answer.
Well, we can play another game, too, because now we have Ed in Oxford who has a technical question for you.
Okay, I'll try.
Yeah.
I'll try it. Ed. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. When we moved into our house about 50 years ago, a couple neighbors gave us, or a neighbor, a better way, Rose of Sharon. We planted mm-hmm. two of them on either side of the house. Now, the area is good soil. It's where a barn was 100 years ago. But
years of
the
fertilizer.
Ones they gave us were a pure white single leaf with a dark burgundy or maroon center, whatever mm-hmm, mm-hmm. color name you want to use.
Mm-hmm.
But we've transplanted them after 50 years here, there, and everywhere over time. And we've moved them. And we've got pure white. Mm-hmm. We've got pink. Mm-hmm. We've got double, triple leaves. We've got blue. We've got purple. We've got...
You didn't know you were going to be growing and breeding Altheas, did you? How wonderful.
I can't figure how they all came from one plant.
Well, they didn't. I mean, they came from the one plant, but it is in the hibiscus family, and the Rose of Sharon is a classic, you know, just a wonderful standard in that family of plants. But their seedlings are notorious for being variable. So, for example, if I was trying to grow only the white one with the red throat, I would have to propagate it from stem cuttings, and then I could get the plant that I want. Yeah. But those plants have been seeding in your yard and coming up, I'm sure, which is just delightful. But you are actually getting everything that everybody always wants in that plant, which is to say the varieties that, you know, you have to pay a whole lot for. You have to pay a whole lot for some of those. For double blue, ooh, that's a big one, you know. So you've done a wonderful thing, but I love that it's on where a barn was, because that's literally, you know, decades of fertilizer just waiting for those trees to take care of them. I bet this is a beautiful garden. You've got seedling trees.
My wife keeps something blooming all year long.
That's delightful. You know, another plant that we don't think of that is also a lot seedlings in our part of the world is pecans. You know how you'll see some pecans that are as big as your thumb and bigger, but there's others that are very small, and we use them more for pies and for making pecan oil and stuff. Those are from the seedling trees, and that's really the closer to the native that we have. When you see the altheas, and some of them I know are dark blue, some of them are light blue, the darker blue ones are usually the ones that are the older member of that genetic family. But we have named varieties, like the white with a red throat is Diana. They're all named, a bunch of those are named after goddesses. So people like those plants. I'd love to see pictures of it. Please send them to us.
Okay, we'll try to get it done.
Thank you much. Have a wonderful day. Tell your wife that we just love her. I haven't met her yet, but I love her. That's wonderful. What a great plant. My grandmother's sister had them down the side of her house, and that's where we played as children when we weren't supposed to be indoors listening to the soap opera on the television, which was considered too racy for the little girls. So we would play outside, and of course they had the windows open because there was no air conditioning in those days, and we got to hear the soap opera anyway. Kids will be kids. They'll figure it out. They will figure it out. What a nice neighbor. I love this. You know, Paula says that her neighbor taught her to make biscuits. I think that could be possibly the best thing in the world. I wish that I had stayed and listened better when my grandmother was trying to teach me. Maybe I would be able to make biscuits.
I like a biscuit. Now, finding somebody that knows how to make a great biscuit, you know, that's not as easier said than done.
No. Yes, it is. And I got to tell you, it's not me. So, ooh, right now at supertalk.tv is the magnificent Chinese parasol plant that it's a long story, but it's one of those plants that you don't know that you miss until you see it in bloom somewhere, and then you feel like you just have to have it. So take a look at that one. You'll be glad that you did. Be real glad that you did. I have a couple of things that I think are kind of interesting today. Some days the world of garden news and, you know, science breakthroughs and whatnot is not all that interesting. This week, though, I have to tell you, Lance, I was very happy to find this out. There is brain chemistry. We've always heard about the things that, you know, serotonin helps your brain mellow out and that sort of stuff, and oxytocin is supposed to have something to do with a love hormone and this and that. Well, it turns out not so much. Turns out when people are good friends and have a chemistry that other folks can see, as Bonnie Raitt would say, something to talk about, it's actually an oxytocin reaction, and it really doesn't have anything to do at all with the future generations of that particular set of people. It has to do with alliances of today. It has to do with the friendships that both make things stronger, and also apparently those kind of friendships help tell you who your not friends are. So it's oxytocin related all the way around. Now, the folks at UC Berkeley did this work. Okay, granted, it was not with humans yet, but I think we have all seen bonds between people that are less critical and bonds that are more critical. We have said for a long time that Lance and I are friends because I finally realized he was there. Because I was so rude. I was rude for about a year, y'all. Y'all know y'all were here. But it's just the true story that once you talk to someone, you recognize what it is that you have in common or don't. And both of those things are related, apparently, to your oxytocin levels. So we have a new thing to think about.
I like it.
I figure it'll be like the next mood ring.
We'll have your oxytocin ring.
Exactly. We'll have something you have to wear around to see who you're matched up with that way. But I never really knew about those things. We always hear that there's an important piece of it, but that it goes to the hormones between human beings. But most of the prejudice has been for just like seedling research, you know, what's the future of that species? No, it's not that so much. It's about alliances, and I blame some of the, like, Survivor, you know, and those things where you have to form teams with people that you would never otherwise meet for some of this research, too. I figure they'll be doing that pretty soon, telling us all about it. There are many, many things going on in the world today. I'm going to tell you now that we will be talking with Jeff Wilson from Mississippi State in the next hour. He, of course, leads the Master Gardener program up there, and they are in the midst of recruiting. In fact, you better hurry up because its classes are about to start. But I want to tell you that a day doesn't go by that I don't think about the good times and the things that I learned and the smart people that were in that program. I was really very fortunate to be part of that class, and I think you ought to consider it. So we'll talk more about that with Jeff in the next hour. You know what else today is? Today, my friends, is Lord Krishna's birthday. That's right. This is Janmashtami. This is one of the great celebrations in this particular the Hindu festivals because it's a birthday. Everybody loves to celebrate a birthday, right? It is one of the ones that it celebrates in particular with parties and events, obviously prayers and rituals and that sort of stuff, but it is one of the more celebratory. When you think about bright colors, and lots of food and lots of people and lots of friends, you're probably thinking about somebody's birthday. And in this particular case, this particular day, this year, it falls on August the 16th. It is, as they will tell us, the Bhagavad Gita. Now, if you've never heard of that, you should look it up. There's some interesting words in there, some interesting things to learn about. And in fact, I'm just going to tell you, people have so much more in common than they have that separates them as human beings. We all are seeking, where did we come from and how did we get here and, you know, what do we believe in and how do we treat people and all that sort of stuff. You'll find all of that in the Bhagavad.
Saying that Lord Krishna and I have something in common today.
I wanted to tear that to the end, but it's only today. I'm not saying it'd be every year.
Mm-hmm.
Because that it does change
their
calendar.
Full advantage of that.
Their calendar is different, but you have every right to celebrate today in a particularly momentous fashion. Because there's people all over the world celebrating your birthday.
Yeah, I'm feeling it.
I think that's a wonderful thing. Gosh, so much. Have you ever heard of banana oil?
No.
We'll talk about that in the next hour. The only thing I know about when you hear someone talk about banana oil, has nothing to do with a banana. It's completely made in a laboratory, and it's how the antibiotics were flavored when my children were little, and it's just awful. They didn't
was
like
that
it.
That was the flavoring stuff they'd put in.
Yeah. But there's a whole lot of whole lot of banana oil stuff that's just crazy, silly, fun things. We talk about so many pieces of the puzzle in this world of how did you get to this? How did you find out you could eat that? You know, well, the good news is you didn't have to press a banana because it was actually not a banana that gave us this stuff. I'm still trying to figure out who watched that creature in the ocean and decided, I think I could pop open that oyster.
Yeah, that's still, or the crab. If you don't know how to prepare that, it's just water when it comes out.
Exactly. You watch the you may have watched the creatures do it, but we don't have that kind of ammunition. Our arms are not built that way. So we built tools to kind of take the place of that. But who did that first? Who first thought about putting those olives in a barrel and leaving them for 10 years? I don't know. Somebody did, though, and I'm awfully glad they did. My goodness. We're celebrating Lance's birthday. We're getting ready for quite frankly, a hot week in the garden.
Yeah.
We can talk about what's coming and what to do. We'll let the weatherman do that with us when we get back. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Sometimes I can just count on you to pop in with the tune that suits the situation.
Well, we had the regular one, Althea, by the Grateful Dead.
Yes, and then we had
Since we were
Althea.
Having a very
Since
detailed
we're having an Althea, Althea
Yes, I had to play both of them. Amazing
Two
cuts.
Of my favorites.
Yeah.
Two of my very favorites. Thank you. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, yes, Althea is also the name of one of the most famous Olympic athletes that ever lived. I mean, it's a wonderful name. But no, they wouldn't let me name my daughter that. So they said, that's a tree.
If I had a son, he'd have to be named Jack Straw from Wichita, if I did it right. You know,
oh,
it's
dear.
It's one of my favorites.
That's a good one. I like it. But I don't know if he'd like it.
First,
but
yeah, you know, if you got those people that give him their strange first names, that would be his.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
His first name would be.
I have a friend who's named for the mascot of the school where his parents were in college.
Yeah.
It's not all, you know, he's fine, okay, but my goodness. We should think about these things. Trust me, we should think about these. Well, great question coming in on the text line today. In addition to all of the happy birthday Lances, and Paula has given us a dream book of flowers she wants for next year that she's picking out for her seating area. It's going to be gorgeous. We'll have to just move the show there. That's all there is to it. And also, when you check this out later, I don't know anybody else that has a cat and a turtle as pets.
And a gecko.
And they all hang out together. So
and she feeds them like jam on those biscuits.
Yes. Yeah.
She's amazing.
I don't know how she does
that. My dog would never leave.
No, that's true. Yeah. Don't if you go
she
visit, you can leave the dog.
Well.
That's true. They've got her trained, but she's got them trained too. Now, why are my lantana not blooming? You hear an echo? This has been an issue, so please don't feel like you're alone. This has been an issue all summer. This particular set of lantanas bloomed for years. They bloomed great, and then they just stopped. There are a couple of things going on with lantanas, and there are a couple of things that can go on with lantanas. One is we don't think to feed them because they don't need to be fertilized. But if these haven't been fertilized in memory, you may want to consider doing that. It's not too late, no matter where you live, because lantanas are going to bloom right up until frost, wherever you are, and then they're going to be frosted if you get frost. So you can go ahead and do that. But before you do that, take a look at the leaves. If the leaves are really lush and really brilliantly green, fertilizer's not the issue. It may be that a tree has grown, that you've ended up with more shade, or it may simply be that there's been so much rain that the plants are thrilled and satisfied and feel no need to bloom at all because they're just so healthy and happy with their leaves. So, you have a couple of choices. If the leaves are beautiful, you just need to realize that they've had a bit of trouble getting enough oomph, you know, to bloom because they're so lush. And the other is, if they're the other way around, if the leaves are very small, kind of, and dried up a little bit, but there's no bugs, it may simply be fertilizer. Either way, you're going to trim a couple of inches off all the way around that plant. Then you will fertilize it or not fertilize it, depending on whether it's lush or kind of sad looking, either way, however the leaves are. Take care of that part of it. But the other piece you have to be aware of is that over time, the insect problems can develop, and we don't think about them because we cut the plants down every year, and that pretty much takes care of the bugs. But we've had a busy summer with bugs. We've had plenty of warm temperatures. We've also had plenty of rain. So if the leaves are stippled or if they are chewed in one fashion or another, then you have a different issue. You've got the lantana mite, you know, is going to take a lot of the blame for that particular problem. So if that's the case, you may have to prune off a little bit more to get rid of the damage. But the issue is, at this point in the year, it's still only mid-August, I'm going to prune them and try and see if I can't get them to bloom. If they are looking puny, I'll give them a little fertilizer. If they're looking lush, I won't. And if they have a bug issue, I'm going to cut that off right now and see if I can't find out. You know, maybe they'll bloom without it next because the bugs are not around, or you may find out that you've got a persistent problem and you'll have to treat it. But either way, you can get those lantanas to bloom again. So give them the opportunity to do that. We have here's the other thing. Sometimes when you have a lantana that doesn't bloom, it's old, and a little heavier pruning might be required, but I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think it's either going to be real lush or it's going to be the other way around. See that kitty and turtle? Come on now.
Exactly, yeah.
That's Toodles in red.
She sent a bunch of great pictures, too, including the biscuit.
Make me hungry.
I have to give a shout-out to a buddy of mine. Exact same birthday, same age, all that good stuff. Work together. It's funny how things are in life. You know, I have a dog that's born on the same day sitting next to me, and a great friend in Oxford who he normally probably would be listening, but he's sitting out at Sardis on a huge boat when he texts me, "What are you doing fun today?" I'm like, you know, probably eating some catfish. And so what about you, bud? And he's sitting there, you know, got the big screen TV out on the lake with the huge yacht looking thing. You're having a great time. Have fun, buddy. Rub it in a little bit.
Just a little bit.
He listens to all of our shows. Great friend. So happy birthday, buddy.
You know, there's the thing about birthdays. We want to celebrate them some years. Some years we're not so crazy about celebrating them. But on the other hand, if it's somebody else's birthday, we're more than happy to.
I was like, you could have invited me.
Well, yeah, you could have done that. That's
no,
true.
He's great. I have a standing invite. I hadn't been to Oxford in 5 years, so I need to get back up there. And
I don't think I have either.
It's been a bit.
I did a workshop there before the pandemic, and I don't think I've been since then. Now I have to think about that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Well, and I want to commend you on your technical support team at the studio there.
Y'all have done an amazing
job. The image is crystal clear. Backdrop looks great. Everything is perfect. So I just wanted to say, you know, it took us, one real good try and maybe a second test. But you have an amazing team there. Tell us who those folks are, because we need to give them a pat on the back.
They're absolutely the flawless and amazing Daniel Brown and her own self, you know, Laura Claire Newman Brown. They are my kids. They are my team. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. So I'm happy to say that Super Talk was very generous, but they've given me a whole room in here. One of these days we'll do a little shoot around and show you the whole studio.
A little panorama.
Because it's quite something. He has a full-time real life, but he also does an awful lot of music and podcasts and things like that here in this studio. So I get to step in, and I like that.
Well, it is a great setup.
I'm the luckiest person in the world. That's all there is to that. Somebody said to me the other day, "You keep saying you're so lucky. Why do you feel like you're so lucky?" I said, "Well, because stuff happens to everybody, okay? But a lot of times the rebound is not any better, you know, or the next chapter is not any better, or the things that change on you weigh you down. And I just like to hope that I'm like Julia Child and I learn something every day. You know, every time I go in somebody else's kitchen or somebody else's garden, I learn something and I get to add that to my legacy, to my retinue, to my world. That's what makes me lucky. It's not that I don't work on it, but sometimes you work on it and it still doesn't go right.
All right, I don't want to look this stuff up. I don't. You've said two words in the last 10 minutes. I'm like, you know, I want to ask.
Oh, dear.
I could have looked them up. The Stipple and the Retinue.
Okay.
So come on, English.
Here comes the English major.
404. And, yeah,
let's, okay. When you look at a leaf that should be solid green and it looks like somebody has pinpricked it with white ink.
Okay.
And it has little stipples.
Ah.
That's what stipples are.
That's what those are. Gotcha.
Yeah. Retinue is that which accompanies you.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah.
I wanted your definition.
It could be.
That's your accoutrement.
It could be your accoutrement, except it's usually people rather than stuff.
Gotcha.
Accoutrement is stuff.
Stuff is
accoutrement. But retinue could also be your ducks if they follow you around.
Right. That's your support team, potentially.
Yes.
Yes.
And I am very lucky. I think I'm also lucky.
Or entourage.
We're going to talk to... talk about the Master Gardeners coming up in the next hour, and I just had to pull this out to welcome Jeff into the show. We'll be right back.
We are advocacy, a century of wins, protecting private property rights, advancing technology, sustaining our land, conserving our natural resources, all to pass on to the next generation. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
For a flipping good time.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between. Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal. On Super Talk Mississippi.
Hello, hello. Welcome in. Yes, indeed. My goodness, y'all filled up the text line during our time here together. We've got a little bit of a frozen situation going on. We're going to get the camera freed here in a moment. As soon as we said it was going okay, that's all we had to do.
That's my fault, too. The way it works. Huh?
We're frozen. Anyway, he's going to fix that. We have lots.
I'll just put our pictures up.
Put the pictures up until you can get that to go. Yeah, that's super duper. I am answering a question on the text line that asks me, will today's show be replayed this week? And the answer is yes. The show replays on Sundays. And then really after that, though, y'all got to get with the YouTube because you can literally have days, weeks, months of me as at the Super Talk channel on YouTube. So that's going to be.
Oh, yeah. And I have that'll be
any moment.
I'll take the 6 segments mm-hmm. that we have and remove the commercials, glue them together. Then we place it on the YouTube Super Talk channel. So if you want a little bit, you know, it cuts off about 20 minutes potentially, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, because it's an online version. So feel free to jump on that. Also, it will download in podcast form as well. So, yeah. you know.
And if you subscribe to the newsletter, you get my selection every week in your own email box.
Yeah, we do a couple of social media clips.
Lots of ways you can catch up with me.
We try to do a couple of social media clips each week. The Garden Mama picks from the show that we think may be the most relevant. I trust her. She's the expert here. I pull those out, and we embed those as well. So if you see Twitter or those things, you'll be able to.
We're working now. There we are. Yeah. Hello.
Hey, and don't worry. This happens
all the time. I know. Life is full of things that happen. It's how we handle them that makes the difference in our lives. And I say that with regard to everything from a camera that, you know, decides to freeze up all the way to the most major things that happen in your life. This is not baloney. This is me telling you the truth.
I'll say this. This company is the best at fielding the rough hops.
Life's full of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're watching baseball and you go, wow, that was a rough hop, man, we got a team of folks that are just good at that. I'm fortunate to be a part of that because I've learned how to think better. You know, on my feet, I was much more of a financial guy, and, you know, everything had to be kind of predictable and laid out, and you wanted your day to unfold that way. The more I've hung out with you and learned from all the great broadcasters, but especially, like, plants are not predictable.
You know, you're right.
And I've always loved gardening because of that it isn't predictable, because it kind of broke me from those habits of I'm very OCD with certain things. Yeah, mm-hmm. I want it a certain way, and it sits here, and it needs to be there. This has been fun over the years to be tested in that and learn. Like you said, how do you deal with things that aren't perfect?
That's really the lessons of life. Everybody wants to know, why are we here? And some days I truly think it's to figure out how to cope with the things that are here.
Yeah, I think so. It's a test, right?
It's all a test. Jim in Ellisville has a plum tree. And every year the grub-like insect burrows in the plums and eats them, which is very not unexpected. I have to tell you, you're in good company with that, Jim. You're going to want to get yourself on a schedule with spraying for the insects. You start next year in January with pruning the tree and fertilizing it, and get yourself a plum tree insect spray. There'll be almost there's several different choices, but you're going to need to use that. And that's really very simple. If you only have the insect problem, you can probably use just one particular spray. But what you need to do is talk to a horticulturist at your local garden center, or one that you can get in touch with. You know, you can send it to me online, mamaonair@yahoo.com, and I'll give you some advice about that too. But it's very specific as to what's available. The plum curculio has its own name because it's a worm that is always going to be in the plums. And if we're not taking care of it, we're not preventing it and not dealing with it, they will mess up the fruit. So I apologize for it taking me so long to get to that answer, but the tree is about 20 years old, so I guess it's been having a problem for a little while. If you're not pruning, it doesn't look like it's been pruned recently particularly much, and so that will help too because it'll give you a better opportunity to spray the tree. Okay. All the happy birthdays, so many of them. This is so much fun. There's the things people say to you, sir. My goodness. Great.
We have some wonderful people. I mean, I'm just an honor, honestly, to get to do this. They say in life that the hardest times to deal with folks are about their money and with food. And I've done that. I mean, I've 16 years in finance, and after that I spent about 5 years, you know, spending drinks and serving. It was kind of a challenge, but yeah, you know, and I found that that was obviously true. People are they like their money, they like their food, everything kind of a certain way. I've learned so much, you know, over the years that, you know, people are wonderful, and you catch them, it's all relative, right? Perspective is important.
It's very, very important. That to me, you know, it all comes down to the same old golden rule that everybody just, you know, quotes ad nauseum to the point where people don't even listen to it anymore, but it's the truth. Treat people like you want to be treated. You can call it customer service 101. You can call it how to get better tips. You know, you can call it getting your clients to appreciate you. But if you treat people the way you want to be treated, it's going to go better. Things are going to happen better.
And you learn to listen, I think, too. That's such a big piece of it. It's like listening to your plants talk to you. I love, you know, I sit there and watch one. I want to tell you the hibiscus just it went south fast. It was terrible.
It'll happen.
And the other one looks great. You know, it's just you sit mm-hmm. there and you try to mm-hmm. listen to them, and you know, and they're not telling you what you need to know.
They're
and,
not talking loud
yeah,
enough.
Not talking loud enough to me, but I tried. I really that, not and I'm very disappointed in that because it looks so healthy. But then the other one sitting over there 5 feet away is, you know, going, yeah, look at me.
Hey, pay more attention. I'm over here. Beautiful, beautiful hummingbirds. My goodness. My goodness, how sweet. 10 feeders have to fill 3 times a day.
Yeah, I like that.
That's just lovely.
To fill 3 times a day. That's a full-time job.
That reminds me of our dear departed Paul Gallo.
Yeah, he loved
that for a long time.
Man, he would
what
send
a gorgeous me. Fern this one is.
Isn't
oh,
that
my
a beast?
Goodness. How do you get maypops started? Well, maypops, of course, for those who might not happen to know, are the fruit of passion flowers. It's a native flower, native passion vine, native plant, and I think the name maypop, I've heard this all my life. I don't know that it's true, and I've never looked it up. But the pop is whether or not it pops when it hits the ground, because they are heavy, and they will fall off the vine. So they may or may not pop. And when they do pop, they make a big noise. So that's probably where the name came from.
I was waiting for your explanation on that one. I was thinking like papaw or pop, you know, like well, may pop like these or something. You know, no, it's totally
so.
The other
I
way.
I think it's the noise. Yeah, it's the splatter, not the splat. But they're a beautiful vine, and the seeds, once the maypop is ripe, the seeds are ready to be planted. I've seen people go to great lengths to take them apart and take the seeds out and dry them and keep them. And, of course, if you order the seeds, you're going to find that it's going to come to you that way. But I've also seen people take the maypop, let it be, you know, break it open, and just plant that. So I think you have your choice of how that can go. You can get started with the fruits or you can get started with the seeds, either way. It's kind of like tomatoes. You know, I was taught, and you probably were too, all these steps to saving tomato seeds. And then the same person that taught you that, in my case, came over and said, but on the other hand, here's this seed, and you've already got the seeds have sprouted inside the tomato so that it's starting to try to pop out the edges of the skin. Just plant that. Now, you'll have to thin it because you're going to have 100 little tomato seeds, but still, you'll end up with plenty of tomatoes. So that's great. Nice, really, really pretty. Pretty, pretty fern, too, by the way, on the maypop people. That's beautiful. I don't think we've missed anything. I think we've got everybody here. This was an interesting one. What to do? They've got big problems on lots of damaged leaves from the leaf miners. My suggestion is spinosad, but the problem is that you don't know what has laid the egg that is in, because you can't get to the eggs, to the larvae once they're inside the leaf. So, but if you can find that you've got, for example, if you've got soft flies damaging hibiscus, you can figure that that's what it is. And yes, spinosad will take care of that issue. So that's one thing. Okay. All right. Good stuff. Today is also World Honeybee Day. Yep, that's right. It's yet another important day. Usually they're so silly. And the ones today were actually, quite educational and quite fun for us because it goes along with our world. In the case of World Honeybee Day, it gives me the chance to tell you that there are 7 big families of bees in the world. They're in the 20,000 known species. So if you're going to study bees, you're going to be here for a while. There are, they range in lifespan 25 to 28 days, all the way up to a couple of months. But if without them, we are really messed up. We don't get pollination, but there's a lot of other things that we don't get. I've never had to learn the 7
honey.
Families. Well, exactly. I've never had to learn the 7 families, but I can tell you that if you're trying to learn Latinate names, it's a good place to start because they've got just about every syllable in them. We talk at times about there's a lot of myth around the queen bee. I remember when we used to talk about the products that came from honey that were good for you. They always talked about the queen bee jelly and this, that, and the other thing. Well, it's actually, the colony is a colony for a reason. There's usually more than one, and especially now in modern times, there will be more than one queen. But in fact, that particular part is still ruled by her. not really a king bee in that sense, but yes, there are obviously.
Well, it's a few days early, but we wouldn't have Winnie the Pooh either. He was born on August 21st, 1921, made his debut in London. So, but you know, we wouldn't have Winnie the Pooh really if we didn't have bees. Think of it.
This is very true.
The whole story
wouldn't make any sense at all. And after all, you know, those of us who kind of came up on Winnie the Pooh have always known that you needed to stay away from those bees, but we found it difficult to do so.
Yeah.
In the same way that Pooh did.
Well, he was tempted.
He was seriously tempted. Because, so, I mean, you know, come on, it's honey. But anyway, the main kinds of bees are bumblebees, honeybees, and the one that we don't think about very much, the solitary bees, because, yes, there are bees that live alone. I know that seems completely counterintuitive, but that's how it is. There are, in fact, there are different. There's some that are T90, and there's some that are as big as your thumb. So, you know, but the bees are a big family, and there's a reason that we try to celebrate them as much as possible. I do appreciate how much more has been done about this. There's a series of flowers coming up now that are all grown from seed from our correspondent, and they're really beautiful. I'm very happy that you sent those to us. Thank you. Appreciate it. Because there's so many things that we talk about all the time. Well, here's to get this, here, how to get that. But seeds really do make a lot of difference. If you can grow something from seed, you've done something. Oh, my goodness. That's really pretty. Trumpet vines and hummingbirds. That's lovely. Really, really pretty. Nice morning. Okay. Oh, my goodness. There's so much information in here today. I'm loving the hibiscus. She sent us pictures of, I think, three kinds of perennial hibiscus that are just beautiful and all grown from seed. Yes, you can do that. And I will tell you that in this particular flower bed is one of the best companion plants for hibiscus, for perennial hibiscus, to me, is the little, well, we call them bachelor buttons, but it's Gomphrena. It's a little cornflower type flower with a really stiff stem and stiff little flower on it, because they'll be in bloom all summer long. And the individual hibiscus, of course, the flowers last a couple of days, they'll come and go. But when you've got something else in that bed with it that blooms all the time, it continues to draw your eye to that spot in the garden. And it gives you a little time in between the hibiscus. You don't feel like you're missing anything because you still got flowers over there. It's really pretty, very nice. Lovely, lovely pairing. I have, you know, sometimes you read something and you just think, this is just, they're not even going to believe me when I tell you this. I've been thinking about Edinburgh, Scotland for a while now. I would really very much like to go to the Fest Edinburgh, where I may have talked about that before, where they say that there's a stage for anyone and a chair for everyone, you know, that's a seat for everyone. So a whole bunch of festivals all at one time goes on for the whole month of August, I believe. But somebody at the University of Edinburgh has decided to study cats with dementia. And I have to bring this to you because, well, I really thought I was making a joke when I said that a couple of my cats along the way have gotten old enough to have dementia, but indeed they do. And when we do this, when we do the brain scans to study, it really does have the same sort of formations that a human brain does. Now, there are different pieces of the puzzle, and what we're trying always to do in these researches is to understand how those synapses can be either rebuilt or maintained so that there's no loss of connectivity in the brain and therefore there's less dementia. And hopefully, in the case of cats, we as human beings who are responsible for them can find a way to understand them a little bit better and get some more of their information into us, get some smarts about how all of this works. Pretty tough stuff. But I have to say that I've always wanted to go to Edinburgh, and now I really want to go because I'm interested in dementia research in cats, but not as much as the festival. I think that's really going to be the thing I want to do. Now, I wonder how long it takes to get your passport these days. Well, we'll see. We'll find out. We have a lot coming up here in just a very short period of time. We're going to talk about banana oil. I did promise that to you today. Some really wild things that they found in the Grand Canyon. And talk about the disappearing planet next door. Is that possible? Sure it is. First, though, because all of these things, you know, there's one thing and then there's another. We are going to have the great opportunity for you to meet Jeff Wilson from Mississippi State University. He's going to help me help you learn to be a better person, a better gardener, by becoming a master gardener. All right? Stick around. We'll talk to Jeff right after this.
I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and IMPACT, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
At Key Constructors,
tell mama and all the folks back home, sometimes a man just feels he's got to make it alone. Tell mama why I'm leaving so soon, because this life I lead has got me sick through and through.
We've been on a theme today of what's going on, how you figure stuff out, when you do things, how they turn out, and what you do with it, and how that makes the difference in how, what the outcome is. Well, I'm going to tell you a quick story that I've known for a while now. First point is that everybody likes a gardener, and everybody needs more gardeners in their life. Truth of the matter is, the business of the state research institutions like Mississippi State University is to learn how to do stuff better at a level that you and I may or may not participate in, because we want to know the actual, we don't want to know the scientific factoids. I do, because I'm such a science nerd, but you may not care how many flowers that hibiscus is supposed to have, or how many pollinators need to visit a particular field before it's going to get actually be productive. Okay? That goes on at that level. But there's also what's called home horticulture. And when we have extended that over the years to also be called urban horticulture. That's you and me. That's us. And that's why I'm happy to welcome Jeff Wilson in to talk to us today. He's an assistant professor, you know, my world, floriculture and ornamental horticulture, but he's way over my pay grade, trust me, at Mississippi State University. And he is the person who runs the Master Gardener program there. So that's what we're going to talk about this morning. Good morning, Jeff. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. Very glad to have you here. The master gardeners in every state, well, almost every country, in fact, around the world, are that adjunct arm. They are volunteers. They are receiving training in hard horticulture, real live, honest to goodness, here's how this works horticulture. And then they're putting it into public projects that benefit everybody in the community. Did I summarize that correctly?
Yes, that's perfect. We we, being MSU Extension, we train volunteers and in areas of horticulture and agriculture, and then they give their time back by volunteering and supporting the local MSU Extension office, and they do that for, you know, home horticulture education efforts in their local community.
There can be everything from a garden at a school to teaching senior citizens, you know, how to arrange flowers. I mean, literally, the master gardeners do everything. If you're thinking about it, there's one out there doing it.
That's absolutely right. And we have master gardener groups in 50-something counties in the state, so we're scattered all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
And they just do numerous projects. We've got over 300 different projects going on around the state. And it's a wide variety of things, just like you were talking about.
Well, the first year that the program was in Mississippi, I was lucky enough to be invited to join. And Rebecca Bates managed to talk us into digging ponds and planting bulbs and doing all sorts of things, which were great. With the friendships that are formed, the lessons that are learned are life-changing. And I have to encourage everybody to take part. Now, I will say, it used to be kind of difficult. You used to have to give up a Tuesday morning or a Thursday night or, you know, different things like that. Jeff, tell me about this online approach to teaching these classes, because this, I mean, we can even get Lance involved here. He doesn't sleep. We can get him to take these classes. Talk to me about what folks are going to learn and how this works.
Gladly. And as you said, you were part of the very first class. I think that class was certified in 1992. And
yeah.
So next year we will be celebrating our 35th year of certifying master gardeners, so we're excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, the class for decades was taught in person, so you had to give up a Tuesday and a Thursday, either morning or afternoon, you know, for 6 or 8 weeks in order to take the class. And that was difficult to do unless you were retired. And so now we offer the class in an online format. So anyone that's 18 or older can take the class, and it's a 9-week class, but you do it at your own pace.
Mm-hmm.
So we will have some people that will do the entire 40-hour program in, like, the first week. And most people do it over the first 3 or 4 weeks, but they have up to 9 weeks mm-hmm. to complete mm-hmm. All the aspects of the online training.
I think that's great. And it really is comprehensive, y'all. I mean, this is a program that is – I've often said, you know, Horticulture 101 should actually be Horticulture 101 to 102 to 103 to 104, because it just goes
yeah.
on and on. And we always build on the previous bit of knowledge. But these are standalone topics. So you will learn something, and then you'll go learn something else. It's not, we're not trying to raise scientists here. Y'all don't have to go into that crazy world with me and Jeff. But we do want you to know something about all the different kind of plant families, and also all the different ways that things grow and how they sometimes don't. So it's a really interesting bit of 40 hours is a lot. Now, if you get that 40 hours of training, what do you give back, Jeff? What happens after that?
So as I said, the online course, it's 9 weeks. You have up to 9 weeks to complete the course, and you do that 40 hours of training and take a little quiz at the end, and just so you can show what you've learned. And then the first year after that, you volunteer 40 hours with your local master gardener group and support your local MSU Extension office.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then each year after that, we have a 20-hour service component and a 12-hour education component to do each year after that. And so that's only 32 hours per year once you become certified.
Mm-hmm.
And the average master gardener in Mississippi gives between 90 and 100 hours a year.
I was going to say, they always give back a lot more.
they sure do. And even for those people that are working, it's still pretty easy to reach those minimum amounts, you know, of requirements.
Sure. When you break it down, you know, it might be pulling weeds for 2 hours on Saturday and 2 hours on Wednesday at some place, where it might be going to help shop to plant something, or it could be teaching a class. I mean, the time goes by really quickly, and folks would be surprised how fast you can volunteer that amount of time. It also, frankly, goes to building the garden community where you live. And, of course, the more people that know about it, then the more people there are to come to the Master Gardener sale of plants in the springtime, which is one of the best ways to not only get to know the plants in your area, but also the gardeners.
Yes, absolutely. All of those things are correct. We find that once a master gardener gets involved with their local group and they start working on the different projects, whether it's service or whether it's education, some of the things you just mentioned, that to get the minimum hours is not a problem. People get involved. They get excited. They're getting to volunteer and be around other like-minded people, other people who like plants, and so that makes it interesting. And so, you know, people volunteer a lot of time and a lot of effort once they get involved.
Well, I've said for years that my role model is Julia Child, who said that every time she went in somebody else's kitchen, she learned something. And I feel that way about gardeners and master gardeners. Every time I go to another master gardener group to talk or to visit, I really do learn something I didn't know before. And that's actually what this is all about, because these are the things we talk very seriously in this world about why we garden. And my main reasons for gardening is, okay, it's fun, but it's also good for you. It's good for your head. It's good for your heart. It's actually good for your guts. It's good for all of you to do this. And frankly, being able to exchange that information with other people, as you say, of like mind, Jeff, is really important. It's the thing that keeps the cells popping in your head and also the plants growing in your garden.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, you and I both have degrees in this world, but every time I get around master gardeners, I learn something new, because
for sure,
they whatever their interest is, whether it's camellias, hydrangeas, roses, or vegetables, whatever their interest is, they dive deep. So they have a really strong knowledge of those topics.
So every time
I get opportunity to work with master gardeners and be around them, I'm learning from them just as much as they're learning from us.
Now, tell folks how to get in touch with the program. What is the website, or how do we reach it, and how do we register?
Okay, so just a few ways that they can get to it. We have a MSU Extension Master Gardener Facebook page, and I post all kinds of stuff on it throughout the week. And
it looks great, by the way.
The link's on that, so that's one way you can check it. But the link to get to the registration is msuext.ms/MG. And
that's pretty easy.
Again, you can go to the Master Gardener Facebook page. You can call your local MSU Extension office. They have the link. But you go to that link and you register online, you pay online, and then once the course opens, you do all of the activities with the course. It's all done online. And it's done at your own pace again. So if you have a unusual work schedule and you need to be taking the course at 3 in the morning, that's when you need to do it, then you can do it at that time.
See, I told you Lance could do this.
Yes.
You will be able to do this. Now tell me how much it costs, Jeff, so folks can put it in their budget.
Yes, so the cost for the Master Gardener course is $175, and that covers, of course, all of the course activities. And it gives you a manual that you can use to follow along.
I was going to say, the book alone is worth more than that.
It absolutely
That's great.
Is. That is exactly
That's wonderful.
Right,
that's wonderful.
There's a tremendous amount of knowledge
in that
manual. Yes.
What you're actually getting, Jeff won't tell you this, but what you're actually getting is the sum total of the knowledge of generations of people that have put all this information into the Master Gardener world, both from the scientific side as well as from the gardener organization side. So you're going to have a lot. You're going to know a lot more than you did when you got started. Jeff Wilson, thank you so very much for being with us. I got one more question for you. I'm loving seeing these photos, by the way, of y'all's projects at supertalk.tv. You're at Verona, correct?
Yes, that's
okay. Okay. For y'all who don't know about this, when you get a chance, the Extension Research Center at Verona is one of those places you really need to put on your list of things to check out. The work that y'all do is so important and so innovative. I really want folks to know more about it. We'll have you on another time just to talk about that, if you'd be willing, because there's stuff that y'all do that people don't even know about. So thank you, Jeff. So glad that you could be here with us. Y'all get out there and get yourselves registered for the Mississippi Master Gardeners. All right? All right. Thank you very, very much. This was a gift. We've got lots of Master Gardener stuff going on. Thank you. Appreciate that so much. All right. My goodness. That went too quick. That went really quickly. So glad to have him here. You know, sometimes we try to talk y'all into stuff and we don't really realize how well it takes. But I have heard from several people over the years, because we always talk about the Master Gardeners here, and then the next thing you know, there's somebody saying, well, we decided we were going to do that. So why not? That's wonderful. And yeah, make sure you take yourself to Verona when you can. It's a really important one. One more question about leaf miners. Do you have to pull the leaves off? Yes, that's the answer to that. That was an easy one. All right. Back on this, the text line today. Let's see. Terry in Tupelo, this is an interesting question and probably one that you've asked yourself but didn't want to ask me. Having baby crepe myrtles coming up, you know, popping off of the crepe myrtle itself, you've seen those. We call them water sprouts or side shoots or, you know, depending on who's talking about it. What's the best way to get rid of them? And Terry sprayed them with Roundup, wants to know if that's going to hurt the tree. Well, I don't believe it'll hurt the tree, first of all, because when we spray Roundup, it affects the leaf, but presumably as soon as it turned brown, you cut it off anyway. And that's actually what we need to be doing to those water sprouts. As soon as you see them, if you can rub them off with your hand, with your thumb, it's even better than having to cut them. And part of that is because of the oils that are included in your hands as well as in the crepe myrtle. But it's also because the smaller, the better when it comes to removing a growth like that. Okay? Now, the next thing to understand is that these are happening for a couple of reasons. Sometimes you see a whole lot of water sprouts on a crepe myrtle that has the lawn growing all the way up to it. And in that case, what's happened is you fertilize the lawn and there's actually a little bit too much for the tree and it ends up sending out lots of new growth because it's trying to use up that fertilizer you provided. That's one of the many reasons that we want you to keep the space around a tree free of lawn grass. You may put mulch there. There may be some ground covers or things that you can put there, but lawn grass is not generally a good thing. It will take away from the tree in most cases. So I doubt it's going to hurt. The way to get them off is to rub them off as quickly as you can and as simply as you can. But that's really a different issue, different problem. I can't tell you, Mike. I don't do that kind of identification, but I appreciate you. Let's see. Lantana still blooms some of the time. Ah, there we go. I think the lantana has got a different problem. I think the lantana's got the mites. And I think, Joe, you're going to need to cut those stems off, get rid of them, and let yourself have that regrowth opportunity, okay? We're going to answer some more text questions, talk about National Joke Day. Maybe we'll make fun of me for a little while. Stick around. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
The Mississippi Propane Gas Association was founded in 1941 to represent and promote the views and goodwill of the propane industry. Visit propane.com to learn more about our dealers, suppliers, safety, and application of propane. Propane, energy for everyone. Visit propane.com. That's propane.com.
Bro!
on a theme today, aren't you?
Yes. Well, you know.
I like it. I like it. Not complaining at all. Let's see. Where do we leave off on the text line? Oh, okay. Yeah, Mike, I can't tell you that. I don't advertise. I'm not a herpetologist, so I don't identify that. But I appreciate you. I don't have Terry Van Deventer's phone number, or I would ask him. Okay, next question. Let's see. Thank you very much, Gloria. This appreciate your kind words. Hope. Let's see. What can I do to get rid of these weeds? Nothing I use works. Are they harmful to my lilies and roses? Well, they're harmful in that they will compete. Okay, and anytime we have things that are competing with our desirable plants that are not plants we want, that's the definition of a weed, and that's when we want to go ahead and get rid of them. Particularly in the case of the gripe weed, the one that you have that has the little leaflets going all the way out on the leaves hang out and they have lots of little bitty leaflets. That's a bigger problem than the other ones because the others you can pull up and they'll be gone. But the if you don't pull up the gripe weed right away, you will end up with seeds and then they'll come back again. So here's my suggestion. Pull out all the weeds and then apply a pre-emerge seed preventative to that bed because you're not growing things from seed in it, and it will help suppress these things that are coming up, that are popping up there from, you know, for now as well. You probably do it twice a year in this particular case because these are ornamental plants. Okay? They're only harmful in that they take up the water and nutrients that you would be wanting your desirable plants to get. So that's what it is. Okay? Okay. Now, Lance, if you look at Bobby from Monticello's Japanese maple, you're going to see stippling.
That's okay. That's what we're talking about.
Okay. See how it just looks like it's been dotted?
Yes, it does.
And it spreads over a period of time to where the whole leaf falls off.
Okay.
And that's oftentimes prematurely defoliated. Dogwoods will do this. They'll turn red much earlier than you expected them to, and all the leaves will fall off. It's that same thing. It's an issue that starts in the springtime on the new growth, but we don't see the problem. Same thing as hydrangeas get leaf spot. The Japanese maples get stippling, and there'll even be bigger splotches on dogwood sometimes. Stipples will turn into really fat places, and then the whole leaf falls off. So these are things that need to be dealt with on the new growth in the springtime. Mark your calendar. Give yourself a chance when the new growth comes along. Spray it. Spray it about three times with a fungicide to help inoculate it against that particular pest, that particular fungus problem, and it'll help. Okay? That's really pretty, though. It's a beautiful tree. Joe and Madison were looking at his lantanas and also looking at his figs. The fig he cut back has got some new growth on it. I think that's terrific. And the lantana does look like, again, we've got the stippling, we've got that mite problem. So I've advised him to cut that back. And if it turns up again, you'll want to treat with spinosad. But the chances at this time of the year are that it won't, that you'll just have new growth and new flowers. Okay? Okay. My goodness. Paula, that's a pretty frog. That's really pretty.
You got so many. I'm trying to get them all up before the end, so sorry if I...
We have them in our archive. It's just beautiful.
Yes.
I'm telling you, one of these days, we're just going to be here. We won't be here. We're just going to run the archive pictures.
I think that would be pretty cool, actually.
It would actually be. Let's see. Okay. The fiddle-leaf fig. Greg and Vaughn, this is such a good question. How often do I need to water it? And why are the lower leaves turning yellow? The two things are somewhat related. It's rare for a fiddle leaf fig to tell you that it needs fertilizer, but this one is doing that. When a plant loses its green in lower leaves, it's generally a need for fertilizer, need for nitrogen. But I will also tell you that I think it's getting used up too fast because you're leaving it too wet. It does need to be watered, but it needs to dry out slightly in between the waterings. I have two small fiddle leaf figs right now. And I will tell you, I probably water them about half as often as I water something like a peace lily, or even less, you know, often water coleus. If you water coleus every day, for example, to keep it from wilting, then you're going to water these once a week. if you're watering other things less often than that, you would water these less often. But put your finger in that soil, and it needs to feel dry up to the first knuckle of your index finger before you actually water it. And when you water it, water so the water goes all the way through the pot, okay? And that'll help you get that one back on track. Really, really nice plant, though. I do love those. They're good plants. They're fun to have in the house, and they're beautiful air cleaners, just wonderful, wonderful air cleaners. There are indeed 10 kinds of jokes, and on this, I'm not going to try to tell you one of each, but on this, the birthday of our dear friend Lance, without whom there would be no program here, because, frankly, I don't know how to turn all this stuff on.
Yeah.
So,
I have some skills.
That right there was a self-deprecating joke, because if you left me a list, I probably could do it, but not the first time.
No, you would be able to, yes.
We know slapstick. Okay, that's, I don't know. That's Rob Petrie falling over the hassock, you know what I mean? That's where it's actually physical comedy. Laurel and Hardy, maybe. Farcical jokes are another type that are, it's all exaggerated. There's examples of it, but most of them are a little dirty, so I won't talk about that. I'm a big fan of deadpan. These are the jokes that you laugh at, but the comedian doesn't.
Yeah, well, what would you call, like, airplane and naked gun? What are those?
Oh, goodness gracious. They're pretty farcical.
Yeah.
I wonder if the new one's going to be good.
I don't know, man.
Liam Neeson, that could be.
Yeah, yeah. I watch them all the time, all the Naked Guns and the Police Squad stuff. And I love Leslie Nielsen. So I'm curious how Liam's going to play it. I really am.
I want to see, because it's a great role.
Yeah.
And we would love for that. We always think about situational things that are related. I always say that you could write a sitcom about a hardware store where I used to work, because it's really funny. And everybody in the world goes to a hardware store. Those are situational jokes. Friends is what you think about, Big Bang or something. Characters sometimes can be very funny. Stephen Colbert was very funny in those times. And, of course, anecdotal, where you're telling a story about your own family and everything is material, so, you know, you get to tell that funny joke. We think about observational humor, though, and when I think about observational humor, everybody talks about Seinfeld, but I think about Alan King. Alan King was a stand-up comic in the 60s who came out of some borough in New York and eventually had enough money to get his wife a house in the suburbs, and he was very proud of that, and that was his situational he was observing what life was like in the suburbs because he had never lived there. And the biggest takeaway from some of his bits was that he worked in nightclubs to earn the money to have this house and didn't get home until 4 in the morning. And at about 6:30, all the lawnmowers started up. And so that was his observational humor. Have you ever noticed how you're asleep and nobody else is?
Mockingbird shows up. Yeah.
That was even before string trimmers, you know. I had a neighbor who complained about string trimmers from the moment they were invented. But those are the kinds of things that we try to keep ourselves amused by, because, again, the same stuff happens to everybody. So a good joke is telling the story and then telling how the reactions to it happened, if they were funny or if they weren't. So on that, I wish you a many happy jokes and a very happy birthday, Lance. Thanks, y'all, for listening.
Thank you so
much. Appreciate David doing all this talking for me. My team here can't do it without you. See you next week.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing The Garden Mama Show.
Homeowners, Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000. Home remodeling or improvements, including roofing, over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit nsvoc.us to verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State.
If you're about to
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.